It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus. Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is Julio Rodriguez, and this is the Lookout Landing Podcast.
Comrades, welcome back to the Lookout Landing Podcast. My name is Matthew Robertson, and I am taking a break from screaming in the streets to talk to my friends on the internet. And today, we have the cream and sugar to my coffee, the salt and vinegar to my chips, Kate Prusser and John Troopin. How are y'all doing on this day 784 of the longest year of our lives?
I claim vinegar.
Was not gonna fight you on that one. So, yeah, I'll take cream and salt. A horrific combination.
It's like a 1400s ass meal from John.
Yeah, it's this is a delicacy in some part of France you should not visit.
There's a lot of baking recipes that require both cream and salt. I think mine is worse. Like vinegar and vinegar and sugar, you can make a mean like Vietnamese beef lettuce wrap with like lemongrass, vinegar, sugar. I take it back. That's delicious. That combination is delicious, much like the three of us.
Exactly. The most delicious baseball podcast on the internet is right here, folks. And it's free in your ears every week. How are y'all doing? John, you're back on the West Coast. If you want to update the listeners on your real life, what's been going on with you?
Yeah, so we decided with the National Baseball
Hall. I have to interrupt. I just saw the most amazing thing. I'm sorry.
Go for it.
Two people, you know, if you are a frequent listener to the various pods, you know that the room where I record the podcast has a window that is facing the street. This leads to a lot of unpleasant, like, garbage truck noises when we record on trash day.
Poor Petey Halpin.
I just saw two people walking by, and they had glasses, and I was like, oh, they have wine. That's such a cool idea. Like, take your evening stroll with, like, a couple, like, stemless glasses of wine. Then they got closer, and I look closer, and it is straight up bourbon. I think it's definitely, I'm pretty sure I can smell it from here. Anyway, to the couple that just walked by my window, I want to be friends with you. Please stop next time and bring me along on your sunset bourbon walk. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to interrupt, John. I just...
No, you're and, good.
I mean, do you see that in Cooperstown? Do you see that in Cooperstown?
Yeah, a few more sunset bourbon drives. I think we are, unfortunately, oof, one of the few groups of people who walk and do not just kind of drive around. It's really been a tough one to not be able to sit and drink until midnight for in a bar in Cooperstown for folks. But yeah, we have made our way back to the West Coast, staying currently in family basement since the National Baseball Hall of Fame will be closed until around early July at the earliest. So it's drove back in 2.5 days, 3,000 miles. Cannot recommend it, but did learn that you're allowed to stay in a Walmart parking lot overnight. I don't know if allowed is the word there.
I think not persecuted is the word to use.
Which is more than I need. So allowed will, yeah, well, allowed will work here.
No, I looked this up. I read some great travel blogs. I read some worse travel blogs as well. And apparently Cracker Barrel and Walmart are friendly to RVs and just general like overnight parking and camping. So in the event of you needing to take a cross-country drive during the a pandemic, might I recommend Cracker Barrel or Walmart, specifically in South Bend, Indiana, or Sheridan, Wyoming?
Look, I'm not gonna lie about this. I love a Cracker Barrel. I love them.
Mm-hmm.
I started eating at them in college because we had them in Virginia, but not so much here. And I love everything about it. I love the mm-hmm. stupid little peg game. I love the fact that the floors look like kind of like you shouldn't be there. Like they're
they're a crack your nuts and throw them on the ground institution.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Except that they don't have any of that, so it's just like the gross floor that's not actually covered up by any peanut shells or anything. And
oh, I thought I do they know, not allow that? I don't 100% had it John, in my head that they were one of those
you're
places.
You're conflating that with like. Roadhouse or something. I don't know what you're thinking of, bud, but it's not Cracker Barrel. But it is, I love the food of Cracker Barrel. I love the hash brown casserole. Unapologetically, I love that they bring you a warm syrup bottle when you get pancakes. I love that you can get breakfast all day. I love the biscuits. Oh my God, I love everything about a Cracker Barrel, and it is the thing that I look forward to the most on A, drives where I leave the state of Washington, or B, going to spring training, as there is a Cracker Barrel like right across the street from the Peoria Sports Complex.
Oh, we went there. We went there for during the Arizona Fall League. That was it was tasty.
Did
if
we?
I'm not mis- we got fried chicken, if I'm not mistaken.
What?
I may be conflating my Americana rich.
yeah.
Fast food.
John has been too many places recently, and he can't remember the differences between
I
all of them.
Think that happened first of all because I will never order anything but a breakfast at a Cracker Barrel, so
fair enough.
I don't know, but anyway, Cracker Barrel, if you want to sponsor the pod,
mm-hmm. sure,
I will sing the praises of your biscuits all day long if you just send me a bag of that mix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, America's bourbon. Really going through a lot, but at least we got biscuits figured out. We're really good at biscuits.
That's true.
Well, I mean, really, you need white lily flour, and you need to be in the South to really get biscuits, but I digress. This is not a cooking pod. This is not for me to air my strongly held biscuit opinions, and as you can tell, I have some.
Yeah, I mean, this is the space for that. I think we're all, you know, figuring out what's important to us right now, where our beliefs lie, and Kate is firmly on the side of biscuits.
I am. I don't want a democracy that doesn't have biscuits in it. I mean, there are a lot of other things that I want out of the country right now, but biscuits is a good first step. Good first step.
Yeah. And I want to just address something before we get into the actual conversation that we came here for. I know that people most definitely listen to this show for an escape from the real world, so I'll keep this brief. But I just want to say, like, if you're if you've been paying attention to everything that's happening, which I hope all of you are, and you're not angry in some capacity, I feel like you are part of the problem. And if you're sitting in silence, then you're extremely part of the problem. And there's different ways to like handle this, obviously. Like, you can sign petitions, donate, educate yourself on the issues at hand, and also figure out what places you feel personally compelled to donate to. It should not be anyone else's job to tell you where to direct your anger or especially your money. That has to come from within. And if you haven't found that, I recommend you keep looking. And I know that the protests aren't for everyone. There's people with kids or people who are immunocompromised or people who struggle with walking and standing for long periods of time, don't do well with crowds, whatever the case may be. But if you have even a social media account, you have a voice. If you have 100 followers, just talk to them. Use them to spread your message. Whatever you feel like you need to say right now, the world we live in allows for you to do that. And I cannot recommend enough just saying what you have to say, because I promise you it'll feel better in the end. Unless it's that All Lives Matter bullshit, in which case I would ask you to kindly turn this show off. But we are going to talk a little bit about baseball's return to action and then answer your questions. But I could not comfortably sit here and do this show without first saying those things.
Yeah, it definitely feels like as we're still focused on the draft and we're focused on looking at the return of baseball, and all these things really do feel diminished in importance, because this is a really turning point moment in our country, I hope. I mean, I feel like we go through these things, starting with Ferguson, really. We go through these things every so often, and it's like there are protests and there's outcry and there's a hashtag, and then kind of people forget and we move on and nothing really changes. And I really hope that this is an opportunity, because the world is stopped, where there is an opportunity for change. And if you're one of those people who doesn't know where to start, I tweeted from the Lookout Landing account a few days ago in response to Braden Bishop, who's one of the Mariners white players who is actively speaking up. There aren't that many of them, unfortunately. They are all happy to post the like black square to Instagram, but not a ton of them who are going beyond that. But I posted in response to him a list of anti-racism resources or just things you can read. You don't have to talk if you're not sure what to say. You can definitely use this time to learn and read and educate yourself, just to understand why people are so angry. If you're mad about the destruction of property more than mad about the loss of human life, I would definitely say ask yourself why. And there are resources out there, and we have something on the site today that's kind of a calling to reckoning of for the Mariners to do more than just put out like an empty statement about this. So I hope you would go read that as well.
Totally. And I think that it's been easy to sort of have a weird, I guess, split in my mind, and I'm sure this is happening to a lot of people, where it's like, I would love for sports to come back as a bit of a distraction, but then at the same time, it's like, maybe this is good that there's no other distractions right now, because America is extremely focused on what is undoubtedly one of the biggest issues facing the country right now, which, so like, the Mariners can wait, obviously. We would all love to see the Mariners playing tomorrow, but if it comes at the expense of real issues, then it's 1,000% not worth it. But with that said, there's real news out of Major League Baseball, somewhat, since the last time that us three talked, at least. I admittedly have not been paying much attention. I know that John has, for sure, and mentioned that he has some thoughts. So, John, have you read Major League Baseball's plans that they've come up with for shortened seasons and prorated salaries? And if so, can you please explain it to me like I'm 5 years old?
I can give you the quick recap. So, essentially, the Players Association proposed a 112 or 114 game schedule. They wanted to defer some of the payments, but not actually cut any pay. And they basically wanted to have as long a season as possible so that they could make as much money as possible based on being paid a prorated rate for however many games they played. They would expand the postseason because there is a higher paid TV deal essentially for postseason games, and that's appealing obviously to both MLB and the Players Association. MLB fully rejected that. They said no, they want a deal where they significantly cut the already agreed upon cuts to player pay. So they're floating a deal essentially where they only play 50 games of a regular season, 45 to 50 games of a regular season. They can do that because essentially the commissioner has the ultimate decision on what the season is and when the season starts. So it's essentially the owners are playing hardball saying, okay, well, we'll just say we tried and this is what it's going to be. The Players Association is saying, well, this doesn't count as you making a good faith effort. If that's what it comes to, we're looking at them going to court and there's probably no season. So hopefully that is not where this ends up. But essentially, the concern from ownership beyond not making as much money as they want is they want to make sure they get the postseason as quickly as possible because that's where they make the most money. And in a situation where there's a second outbreak of COVID-19 in a major way, as though the first one has stopped, that would cause the season to shut down. The more postseason they get to, the more money they get, essentially.
Got it. And I feel like one of the things that will definitely come into play, because I've seen this been, like, it's been brought up in something that I saw, but also just because of the way that weather works, like there's not that much time here, right? Like they're going to want to finish right by October, both I think for the mystique of October baseball, but also like you can't really play baseball in a lot of cities in November and December. And then you get into the whole issue of like trying to move people, like if they were to do a spring training scenario where they have all the games happen in Arizona or Florida, like that'd be one way to avoid the weather. But then you have them competing with the NFL and other things that are happening in November, December. So what do you think is the best course of action here?
I think that because exactly as you said, that's another component of it. They don't want to have their playoffs running up against, potentially the major parts of multiple sports.
Right, the NFL, primarily.
Which, I mean, already happened, so it seems like it's sort of a dubious suggestion there anyway. But they particularly would run into the issue of not being able to have teams have their games at home stadiums. You'd have to cut it down to places that are domed or covered or in warm weather areas, and that's obviously troublesome. I think the best solution, if the solution is in fact one where they are playing baseball this year, I think the 82 game proposal is fine. You could do something with more games. I think the more games, the better, but you would need to expand rosters further. Most likely, if you're looking for a deal that gets ownership on board, it has to be in the like 80 to 82 game range. You start that around the first week of July. You give still expanded rosters so that players have 3 weeks to a month to sort of get warmed up, and you can have guys going. You can cycle through pitchers pretty consistently. You have enough depth so that if guys want to sit out, a big part of what MLB or the Players Association proposed, which I thought was really important, was if players had a sort of essentially were at a heightened risk for catching the virus, that they could opt out and would still receive service time and pay, and that players who chose to opt out otherwise would still receive service time, although they wouldn't accrue stats, they wouldn't accrue necessarily the same rate of pay, and that would hurt them in arbitration and whatnot down the way. Not to mention they wouldn't get to play baseball, it would be probably looked down on. But I think that that's an 80 game sort of setup that goes into November. I think that's not too big a deal. I see no particular reason, especially if there's if the concern is so great that there's going to be a second outbreak, which I think is deeply warranted, I don't need to see the Mariners play in T-Mobile Park. Like, that doesn't legitimize the games happening. Like, I get why it might matter for.
I mean,
some
you wouldn't actually probably be able to go and see them play. Exactly. It's like, why not just watch them on MLB The Show? You get the same graphics.
Exactly. You know, and I get the idea of like you want those players to be able to be at home if in fact they live in the area. But I mean, it's even if it's from a somewhat myopic Mariners focused view, not that many of the team's players live in the Seattle area. I don't even know what a lot of them do for temporary housing during the season, but like, you know, Kyle Seager has a house here, but like he lives in North Carolina full time. You know, so many of these guys live elsewhere. So it would just be just as convenient to set something up in or around the spring training facilities. And you know, maybe you spruce up those areas in some way. But I mean, that I think is, you know, you stick a big metal grate on the left, you know, field fence of the Boston spring training park, or, you know, you set up a bunch of fans in left center field, you know, blowing fans, not human fans, and blow in to, you know, create the marine layer in Seattle. I mean, you know, things like that. I mean, they could do. I think that's a safer option and one that allows for plenty, you know, a credible amount of baseball for a season.
I would love to see them try to recreate like aspects of certain stadiums in like Arizona. Like if there's like for the Giants, if they have fans in kayaks just on like a sidewalk outside.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Just like
you got to make the players feel comfortable and like, mm-hmm. you know, whatever you can do to ease that transition from, mm-hmm. oh, we were playing in a beautiful ballpark in San Francisco. So now mm-hmm. we're in Scottsdale. Like mm-hmm. let's get a person on a kayak who can like, you know, catch our home runs and fall into the fake water or whatever. That would be, I think, the least MLB could do.
Import a giant dome for Tampa Bay to play under.
Yeah, yeah. Just like put a tarp, but like inflate the tarp. Like, you know, just pump up some air through there, and mm-hmm. and you know you got the situation going. I actually would love to see. I'm like even more psyched about this idea now, of just like the temporary like outfitting of various ballparks to represent. Because like some places, some minor league stadiums, I know like I think it's the like Florida, like the Grapefruit League team for the Red Sox has like a version of the Green Monster.
Carolina or South Atlantic one, right?
Oh, is it South Atlantic?
Isn't there an affiliate? One of them has a big wall. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's in South Atlantic League.
Yeah, well, and like you would want that, right? Like it's a there's no other organ. You know, you're not going to get to practice on that weird ass thing otherwise.
Yeah, they're definitely there because it was. It's definitely a Red Sox team. They definitely have the wall mm-hmm. because when Dustin Pedroia did a rehab assignment with them mm-hmm. and Julio took a picture with him and it was hilarious because Dustin Pedroia looks like
he's
a garden
gnome next to him. Little guy. Yeah. But yeah, I think that's
sorry, I was Googling honey bucket factories to find a nice home for the A's to play in.
Ooh.
Oh man.
Or like I mean, the largest TGI Fridays in America to house the Angels.
Yeah. And I do want to say, like, I think there have been, I've seen people expressing concerns about, like, oh, well, this will be, you know, illegitimate if it's a shorter season or, like, you know, whatnot. And it's like, I don't know. There are so many things that you if we're trying to go down the rabbit hole of, like, what seasons of MLB history are legitimate or not, like, that is a long way to go of like, well, what was the quality of competition in this season really? Well, like, do we count the, you know, teams even during World War II? Like, do we count before integration? Like, do we count, you know, all, you know, these various strike shortened seasons? Like steroid era. Yeah, like baseball that happens, you know, it's all part of the story, and we want to make it a better story each time we do it, and so I would like to see more of it because I think that is always more baseball when done in a safe way for those who are performing it is the best outcome here.
Yeah, having a season is more important than arguing about whether the season is legitimate or not. You know, Like, it's better to just get them on the field and figure it out later than worry about, oh, if they only play 40 games, will that matter? Although I am interested to see if they do have to do, like, a super, super short season, how the players will react to that. Because, I mean, these guys are professional athletes. They're stubborn. They're competitive. Like, they wouldn't want a cheapened championship. You know, there would be a lot of guys, I think, who would feel pretty weird about accepting a World Series ring for a season that was 50 games long. Which well, is, I mean, again, if that's what they have to do, they have to do. But it just will be... I don't really have a point. I'm just thinking it would be interesting to see how the players would react to that.
Right. Well, and if they're going with the expanded playoffs, which is like at least 14 teams, if not more, you know, I mean, that as well. Like, you know, what happens if you've got an under 500 team in the playoffs and they go on a, you know, wild run and win the World Series, which is way easier in baseball than in really any other sport. You know, I mean... I guess like football, you could say like that could happen, but like, yeah, I would be. It'll be interesting to see how players respond to that.
It sure will.
Oh, well, I don't look forward to the Mariners actually making the playoffs this year, and then a bunch of arguments that the drought isn't actually over because they made it in this weird way. Like, I do not want that to be part of the Mariners.
You call it an El Nino, and the drought is over. We got a rainstorm. Just because it stays droughty after that for a little bit, who knows? It did rain. We all saw it.
It's a good point. I think. Not sure I totally understood it, but it sounded good.
It sounded meteorologically and metaphorically, and I will take no further questions.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say. Your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Wonderful, because we have a bunch of questions. Good. So now is your time to shine, Johnny. Thank you to everyone who submitted questions. I know that we've been doing a lot of podcasts recently that don't necessarily lend themselves to listener questions, so we wanted to carve out some time for y'all in this episode, and we got a bunch, so thank you very much. Some of these are right in line with what we were talking about. I guess we should probably... start with those. One of them is from at Patrick J. Burke 84 on Twitter. Patrick says, with a short season seemingly the only option, how does it work with club control years? Normally, many call-ups start in late May, so the org holds another year of control. Curious how this plays out, as we all want to see the kids get reps ASAP, especially with no minors. Do either of you know what the MLB's plan is for dealing with club control if there's a weird call-up situation or weird shortened season? Do they have any sort of written plan for that yet?
It depends and could very well change based on what the final plan is. The theoretical idea that was agreed on, that presumably would be the framework of any future idea from back in March, was you would essentially get prorated like service time, quote unquote, for however much time you spent up. So if the season was half as long, you would get the equivalent of 2 days for one day up on the big league roster. And, you know, so and so. So it could definitely change, but the theoretical expectation is, you know, just double how long a guy is actually on the roster for service time. Now, how that works, if they schedule intentionally a bunch of doubleheaders, I don't know entirely. I don't know if they'll treat that as like game days, different being multiple days, or just actual days, because it's always weird, but I think the very, very sort of back of a napkin rule of thumb would be to just double the number of days that you'd get based on how much time you were up.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I was legitimately curious about that because I, like I said, I haven't been paying super close attention, right. So that's good to know.
The sort of tricky part would basically be like you would have teams that wouldn't want to call guys up, but you'd also have like teams that needed to bring up pitching, and so I think you'd have like a lot of pitchers get brought up, but you wouldn't necessarily see teams call up like their top field, you know, position player prospects unless they were a contender. So like you wouldn't necessarily see the Mariners call up Jared Kelnick, even though he might be one of the like 35 best Mariners, but you probably would see them call up Logan Gilbert or LJ Newsome and whatnot, things like that.
Got it. Okay, cool. Another question came via email, which was very exciting, from Josh Hamilton. I'm assuming is not the baseball player, just another person out there named Josh Hamilton. They said, when do players actually get better? Do they improve during the season when they are playing and being coached, or do they improve over the off season when they have time to work on things? This question seems more significant in light of the potential lack of a minor league season. Could we get similar development out of having players at facilities working individually with coaching? This to me was very interesting because I hadn't considered this, like the idea of this extended layoff actually being somewhat of a benefit for the players. Obviously, they wouldn't get live game reps. You know, if you're a hitter, you wouldn't be able to face a live pitcher trying their absolute hardest to get you out, at least not in the same way that you would in a major league batter's box. You know, you can't really replicate that in a batting cage or whatever. But I do think there is something here to, like, if you're just practicing, if you can devote an entire day every single day to just doing baseball and not having to do the other parts of a major league season, I feel like there would be some room for improvement. But I'm curious what you guys have to say, because there's no real right answer here. It's kind of a matter of opinion, or what do you think? And none of us have played major league baseball, obviously, so we're not going to have the answer. But I think there's, you know, practice is something that every coach in every sport preaches, and this has basically been, what, 7 months now of just extended practice. So what do y'all think?
I have seen some concerns that we're going to have a lot of tee hitters when we come back from baseball, like meaning that guys have not been facing live pitching, so they've been hitting off a tee. And when you hit off a tee, obviously, it's like the ball is always at the exact same... You can use the exact same hitting plane because the ball is always at the same place, and you don't have to adjust to it. You miss the whole part of it that's like making in-swing adjustments, which is honestly like one of the biggest parts of baseball and one of the biggest parts of hitting, is being able to figure out what is being thrown to you and adjust to make the best swing possible on that pitch, or not swing if it's not a pitch that you can do anything with. So I don't think that players are getting better in this layoff. Players get better by playing games. They get better by facing, if they're a hitter, they get better by facing better and better pitching and having to figure out a better plan, execute that plan, differentiate pitches, strike zone judgment, all that stuff. If they're pitchers, they get better by going up against better and better batters who are more sophisticated in the way that they can spoil good pitches and cover the plate and will force you to sometimes pitch backwards. So there's really just nothing that can make up for in game, and I'm sad to say, like, I don't know what the plan is going to look like for players who are in the lower minors. I'm thinking about, like, you know, the Dominican prospects, the Noel V. Martes, the Jonathan Classes, the kind of the George Kirby's. Like, those are not guys that you are going to test on a taxi squad or whatever. But what is the opportunity going to be for them to get better? Are there going to be scrimmages? Are they going to put all of them at the DSL Academy and have them play one-on-one? I mean, there's got to be some kind of PD plan in place. And obviously, we're not hearing anything about that on kind of the macro level. I'm sure the organization is addressing that on the micro internal level. But yeah, players need to play actual baseball in order to get better.
Yeah, I agree with Kate pretty much across the board there. I think that there are ways in which certain players can improve right now and or at least maintain. There are certain players who may be able to take this time to sort of enhance their physical conditioning, to really sort of redouble or maximize their focus in strength and conditioning, because that's what's available to them now. So, you know, you could see guys who were maybe scrawnier or who maybe, you know, had not sort of filled out their musculature. You could see that improve during this time. But in, you know, the reason that that the sort of minor league system is utilized is exactly as Kate said, you need to progressively challenge guys with enough, you know, a high enough degree of difficulty that they can, you know, face a challenge and overcome it, and they're constantly learning, and you can set up a lot for yourself, but you can't really, like, it is nearly impossible with the financial and just like general resources that almost every player has to set themselves up with, like, here's a high quality, you know, at bat situation where I'm getting a scouting report based series of pitches against me consistently in a pressure situation, like, you know, and that is just not something that you can really make happen. And it's not, I don't even know, because as Kate said, like, what do you do during, once the season quote unquote starts? Because, you know, the Mariners organization has a reasonable number of pitchers. They're going to need probably most of the AA and AAA sort of level guys to be on call for the big league club. That doesn't leave a lot of pitching just kind of hanging out for the position players at that level, for, you know, who's going to throw, you know, you can have George Kirby, you know, and want then throw some bullpens to Julio Rodriguez, but eventually you don't want to just blow up your best pitcher's arms just so you can get appropriate reps for your best position player. So, I do think it's during the regular season, in the course of a regular season, you know, you'll see sort of a degradation of physical strength just because the season's so grueling, but you will have guys like learning and understanding the game and getting better. So in the course of a regular season, you might see guys get better, even if they're getting physically weaker, but they're not having that opportunity to do that right now.
Yeah, I do love the idea of someone like D. Gordon just showing up absolutely jacked all of a sudden, deciding like, yeah, you know, I've been playing baseball for a long time. I think I'm good on the baseball parts of it. Let's just use this whole extended off season to get absolutely massive. That would be the ultimate surprise that I would be excited for, because I think there's going to be a lot of bad surprises too. I think we're going to see, unfortunately, a lot of injuries just because it's so hard to actually replicate any of this. I've been especially thinking about that for the NBA, because there's no way to recreate an NBA game when you're not playing an NBA game. Baseball is a little different, obviously, but there's going to be some guys who are very noticeably out of shape in the NBA, which I'm kind of excited for. But I also think the flip side of that in baseball, where you have guys who just were getting huge all day. We've seen a little bit of this actually already from our boy Dan Altavilla. He's looking...
I was just going to bring him up.
Oh my God.
Looking that... thick.
That dump truck ass is getting
not a
it was
not one to be overlooked.
To
yeah.
Not it was one not small to begin with. And now it is, I mean, Dan has been putting in his work.
Yeah, I think he moved into a squat rack.
That's just where he lives.
Yeah. Well, you know, Seattle rent, you'll take that, honestly.
He curls up at night in one of the little grooves where you put the handle.
I'm picturing him, like, sleeping on it like a bat. You know, he curls his legs and just falls asleep upside down.
Yeah, he's...
like, upside down?
He's trained his unconscious brain to just be doing, like, leg curls. And that's why every morning he wakes up... He doesn't even work out during the day. It's just at night. Like, his legs are just going off.
Okay, let's get into some draft stuff. I know we have, for anyone who's not aware, we have another podcast within this podcast feed. It's all under the Lookout Landing podcast umbrella. But John, Kate, and Joe Doyle have been doing a show more devoted to the minors and draft stuff. But we got some questions for this pod, so I want to address them for maybe people who haven't heard your long-winded draft talks on the other show. One is fairly simple from at Seattle09 on Twitter. Most likely drafty at 6 overall. This is another question that I've been curious about because I'm not as much of a draft head as y'all. So I'm genuinely curious, which I feel like I've been saying a lot. I've been learning a lot in real time here. Who do you see as the most likely drafty for the Mariners with the 6th overall pick this year?
I feel like this is something that would have had a really easy answer like a few months ago. A week ago, even. I was just dead set on them getting Garrett Mitchell. Like, it seemed like that was what was... And he has just been sliding in...
Garrett Mitchell, outfielder from UCLA.
Yes. Very toolsy, but some big questions about, like, the power and... So it just seems weirdly like he has slid out of that top. He was kind of a consensus number 6 for a while and has just fallen out. Max Meyer has lapped him, the right-handed pitcher from Minnesota. Big, big fastball. Short little guy, 6 feet.
And a dynamite slider.
Yes, very, very good slider. I feel like there's a lot of reliever risk there, but he has been mocked to the Mariners a lot recently.
This is Kate's known anti-short prejudice that I've never espoused.
I love a short king. I love Sam Delaplane. I just don't love it with the 6th overall pick in the draft. I like it when you're defying odds. I don't like it so much when there's some physical freaks on the board that you could take. But that's just me.
Who do you think is the likeliest person they have?
I think they're going to take Max Meyer, and I'm going to be really bummed about it. There have been a lot of like shakeups where people are thinking, oh, maybe Baltimore is going to underslot Nick Gonzalez, who there are a few scenarios where Gonzalez, infielder from New Mexico State, really probably one of the best hit tools in the draft, has been like sort of one of the top 5. And there are some mocks where he falls to the Mariners because of Zach Veen getting in there. Prepster with some big power. I think Veen has like a Cody Bellinger-esque look about him.
He's got the swing.
He's upright and that violent uppercut swing.
Yeah. He's not my cup of tea.
Not my cup of tea. Not my cup of tea as a prospect. Not my cup of tea. But I appreciate people who look at him and see like a tremendous possibility out of that. He's probably the highest. You would say he's the highest ranked prep player.
Yeah.
Consensus.
Pretty universally.
So he could maybe wedge himself into those first 5, which would push a bevy of exciting options to Seattle. Maybe Nick Gonzalez and his incredible hit tool. Maybe Emerson Hancock, who for a while was being talked about as the 1-1, possibly, you know, up there in competition with Spencer Torkelson and
Austin Martin.
Asa Lacy came in late, though. He was not one of the first ones. Asa Lacy's draft stock has shot up, mm-hmm. And he had a very strong start to his season, whereas Emerson Hancock really didn't. And even though I think Emerson Hancock has a better track record than Lacy, Hancock throws more strikes than Lacy, does not walk as many people as Lacy. I like Hancock much, much better, but Lacy's got a ton of helium lately. People are talking about him. I don't know. There's so much like subterfuge in the draft and people trying to sandbag each other. I mean, if you hear stories about Mike Trout, like everyone knew Mike Trout. It wasn't just that like he didn't last to 24 or whatever it was because people didn't know who he was. It was who is going to stick their neck out and take the risk on this relatively unknown prep player from Millville, New Jersey, not a baseball hotbed. not a consensus. I mean, everyone knew he was good, but it was just all the clubs were trying to like feel each other out and figure out who really liked him and who might. How late? The goal of the draft is to take the best player possible as late as you possibly can and pay him the littlest because it's a sucky system. it sucks. The draft sucks in a lot of ways. I mean, it's really a competition where clubs are trying to get a deal on players. And so, you know, you can't trust a lot of stuff that's coming out. And who knows? This could all totally be shaken up. My gut tells me that it's going to be Max Meyer, and I've got to just learn to live with that.
Matthew, I want to put this to you real quick. Not a name of a player, but just what would be the like type of player you would want the Mariners to draft at the sixth pick?
Yeah, I think when you're drafting that high, I think you have to go best overall on your board. So mm-hmm. whatever the Mariners board is, I think they just have to take whoever is there, mm-hmm. right, when their pick comes up. Mm-hmm. But for me personally, I think I'm more on the side of Kate, where I like a hit tool over a huge power tool.
Yeah.
So I think that'll has a better chance of sticking and playing at the big league level. So like I know a little bit about Nick Gonzalez. It seems extremely unlikely the Mariners will get him. But a player of that ilk is usually my favorite kind of prospect, just because, you know, if you have a giant power swing and you hit a bunch of home runs in college or high school, whatever, like that doesn't mean you're going to make contact with the ball at the next level, in which case your power tool gets completely wiped out, obviously. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm the hit tool guy. And then with pitchers, it's just such a crapshoot that it kind of scares me. I mean, we've seen from history just so many examples of can't miss pitchers who went 1-1 even and never played a single game in the majors. So give me the hit tool guy if we can get it. Who's that at number six? What's the likeliest person who will last to us that has that kind of profile?
Robert Hassel. My son, Robert Hassel, has the best prep hit tool in the draft.
That's
and
fair.
I want them to pick him. He's projected at like 10 for the Angels to take, for me to be miserable about.
I do think that there's, I mean, my answer for this, who the likeliest person is that they take, I think is still Nick Gonzalez. I think the way that this particular draft breaks down, you've got Spencer Torkelson, first baseman, Arizona State. He's going to go first. There's a lot of talk. I still think Austin Martin out of Vanderbilt goes second to the Orioles. Asa Lacy goes third. And then you have one of the next two takes Zach Veen. That's the Royals, who have taken a billion high school toolsy guys and have built their whole last sort of World Series run around toolsy, you know, high school players.
And their best prospect currently is a guy that they drafted last year in Bobby mm-hmm. Witt Jr. So mm-hmm. if they took a high school guy, they'd be putting him on the same timeline mm-hmm. as Witt.
And then all you need is Toronto to, you know, take one of the pitchers there. And I think that Seattle, you know, it could go a number of ways,
likely.
But I think
it's
very,
like
very
Toronto
likely
would take
that,
a pitcher
that Gonzalez
because
still is there.
Toronto's pretty thin on pitching, and their window is kind of rounding into contention. Yeah. You know, they've got all their scions of famous players mm-hmm. all up there already. Mm-hmm. So they really need the pitching, and they have Pearson, who's really exciting, coming up. But they could use another frontline pitcher.
And to be clear, on Meyer, and we don't need to go too in depth on it, but Meyer is like, he is really impressive, and the concern with him being a reliever is justified in part because of his size, in part because he has been a reliever in college in part of his career, and then was coming into starting part of last year and starting this year. It's not that violent. And for his size, it's not that violent. Right. He's really good. Yeah, I mean, like, he is. Joe has repeatedly made the note.
Is he sixth overall good? I don't know.
I mean, I would want Hancock or Gonzalez over him. I'm just saying,
You want Veen over him.
Well, yes,
too.
But that's not going to happen. No. I think he's going to be gone. The point is, I think Meyer,
the Mariners would never draft him.
The point is, I think Meyer is the most disappointing option, and he is
still really
very
good.
Yeah. You know, so like it's going to be cool no matter really how this breaks out. The Mariners are in a pretty good spot. It's just it could be cooler.
The slogan of the Seattle Mariners from 1979 to present.
Interesting. Okay, I was under the impression that Gonzalez was like pretty much a lock to go before the Mariners, but if there's a chance that we get him, that'll keep me at least somewhat interested in the draft on draft night. Also, you know, for the listeners, not for me, I know this obviously, for our fans. When is the draft?
Wednesday. Next Wednesday, the 10th of June, is the first round, which goes all the way into the supplementary first of round, course. Which is basically like through pick like 36 or something, or 37.
Yeah, common knowledge.
And then they do the rest of it, which is the second through fifth rounds, which is the next day on Thursday. So I think it's 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific on Wednesday, and then at like 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific on Thursday, and the Mariners will have one pick on day one and then five picks on day two.
Exciting. And we will have coverage of all this.
Yeah, we're gonna do a watch. Lot of,
it's
lot
being
of stuff.
Covered on it's being covered on ESPN, which is exciting.
Yes, actually.
Not just MLB Network.
Not like ESPN needs us to advertise for them, but like it makes a huge difference, in my personal opinion.
It is
to have
basic
ESPN
cable versus
something.
Like somewhat expanded basic cable. Yeah. And it is maybe it's easy to find a VPN or, you know, a stream of versus not as easy.
Yeah. Cool.
So, yeah, it's exciting. It should be a little bit more. And they've had, the other thing is they have had a bunch of time to prepare.
And nothing else to distract them.
I will be super disappointed if there aren't some, like, pretty cool video packages. Like, you know who these guys are. There are only so many of them. There's not going to be any of the Mariners pulling Wyatt Mills out of Gonzaga in like the third round or whatever it was. You should not be flat-footed on any of these picks. So I want to see some video packages. I want to see some marketing. I want to see some stars being born.
I also want to see, which has been a theme in both the NFL draft and the WNBA draft, I love seeing the prospects' family homes. That's been so much fun for me, seeing the furniture set up, seeing the art on the wall, seeing, I mean, this one's a little different, but like seeing who's from like a nicer part of town. You know, like you can tell that there's like some of these prospects are like, oh, you've had a very cushy lifestyle, than other ones.
Yeah.
Even just based off the reaction, it's like, holy shit, like we just had our whole life flipped upside down. And those are the more fun ones to watch, obviously, but I also do love the like, holy shit, look at this kid's house, you know? Like, this is where you've lived your whole life. I'm sure the quarantine has been pretty chill for you, random kid from Harvard Westlake.
And there's definitely going to be a lot of that.
That's been a big part, I think, that MLB has missed out on, is like a really cool thing that I love about the NBA and about the NFL, and this is many other aspects as well, but like you get to know the players from the beginning of their career, if not before then. Like, you know, obviously you're going to see these guys and then they're going to go in the minors for a while, but like it makes a difference to like, you know, people knew who Bryce Harper was when he was 16. Like, Bryce Harper's still probably one of the best-known players, if not the best-known player in the league, just because, like, there was a ton of talk about him and hype about him. And so I am excited for, you know, some of these guys who I think in a really good draft, there are a lot of people who are going to be worth knowing and remembering from this draft long-term. So I'm looking forward to that.
All right, y'all. It wouldn't be the Lookout Landing podcast unless we entertained some nonsense that has nothing to do with baseball. So I've pulled two questions from our Twitter feed of people asking things that I'm sure were on their mind for years that they finally had to get off their chest. And we are the only ones capable of answering these sufficiently, of course. So one of them is from @AceEllingson. They simply wrote three words, bridges or tunnels. Now, I'm a bridge guy. For sure. I like the view of a bridge. I like that feeling of like being suspended above water, as like simple as that sounds. Like, it's very cool, I think, to realize like that modern engineering has made this possible also. Like, it sounds cheesy and sort of like Ronald Reagan-y, I guess. But the Golden Gate Bridge on a sunny day is like legitimately one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen in my life. And you don't really get that with a tunnel. Tunnels are cool, undoubtedly, but you don't have the visual experience that you get on a bridge. So I'm tunnel 11 times out of, I mean, I'm bridge 11 times out of 10. I don't know how you guys feel about
this infrastructure question. Yeah, no, that's absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. Tunnels are scary. Like, my grandmother had a fear of them, like some claustrophobia. She could not go through a tunnel. So it made, you know, this was Erie. There weren't a ton of tunnels in Erie, Pennsylvania, but she had to have routes that avoided any and all going under things. Just freaked her out. She thought it could all crumble on her. And I inherited that to some extent. So I would have way rather, I would have continued to drive on the falling down. Like, I would have just, I don't know, video game style, driven piling to piling on a crumbling Alaskan Way viaduct rather than go through that tunnel to this day. I will still want to go over the West Seattle Bridge before I would ever want to go through a tunnel. So, yes, absolutely. Bridges all the way.
People definitely do have a fear of bridges, though. That's why I wanted to pose the question to the group. I think it's undoubtedly a cooler experience, just like I said, visually to do the bridge, but I'm sure it's also terrifying for a lot of people.
So. Yeah, there's nothing cool about going, particularly cool about going through a tunnel.
Well, there is until you turn like 8 years old, probably.
That's right. I like a tunnel personally, but not. I don't. I mean, I'm afraid of heights and I'm claustrophobic, so this is kind of a lose-lose for me. I like a tunnel in like I like, you know, trains and public, you know, like the general like subways and that sort of thing. Like, I find that very, very pleasant, so I have a positive association there. But like the visual that you can create both on and like of a bridge, like bridges can just look so like can make such an impression. I think it is more pretty much on the whole, there's always going to be more fun on a bridge.
All right, Ace Ellingson, you got your answer. I'm glad that you could finally get some closure there on the bridges versus tunnels debate. Okay, the last one, at least the last one that I pulled that I wanted to address, might be a little more contentious. I'm interested to see where this conversation goes. This is a food one, of course. We have to stay on brand. From @MooseMiller2, macaroni salad or potato salad? And as an aficionado of the non-salad salads, I think I can call upon my training here. In my experience, potato salad definitely has a higher ceiling. I think for me, the gap between bad macaroni salad and good macaroni salad is fairly small. Potato salad also allows for more creativity, I think. You can add some bacon. I've had some potato salad with blue cheese, and if you do that, I'm fucking there. Macaroni salad.
That's a red, white, and blue potato salad. You put bacon and blue cheese in it.
Correct. Good, yes. Thank good. You for the correct nomenclature. I did not want to erase the red, white, and blue potato salad community. But macaroni salad, there's not that much you can do.
I'm gonna go to bat for mac salad. I think I would generally agree with you, but like, the best place to go and eat near my college was a Hawaiian restaurant called Bamboo Grove, and
yeah, they kill it on macaroni.
Absolutely
salad,
sensational. So like, I have been chasing that particular mac salad sort of experience ever since, and have been pretty thoroughly disappointed most of the time. But like a real good, like you can put like some chilies and some sweet and spicy experience going in a mac salad. That is hard to beat. There's nothing worse in my opinion than like undercooked potatoes in a potato salad. Like that is just like one of the most off-putting, like a bland kind of mealy potato salad. I will not just pass on it entirely. There's never really an occasion where I would pass entirely on a mac salad, I think.
Yeah, you can fuck both of them up for sure. It's very easy to have like both of these come out pretty bland.
I feel like mac salad is definitely the one that could get worse. Because, I want to be very clear. I am anti-mayonnaise-based foods of almost all sorts. Mayonnaise-based salads, no good. So I tend to avoid both of these things.
not a terrible sort of culinary choice.
You know, I've read Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing by Judy Blume when I was a kid, and I think that somebody gets food poisoning from potato salad or something, and it's the mayonnaise, and I just it imprinted it on my brain. I will say I've never been a huge fan of Mac salad, but L&L Hawaiian Barbecue, they use like a sesame oil, and it almost stamps out the mayonnaise-y taste. So if there was just a little more heat to it, and I do like doctor it up when I get it. L&L is the bomb. So I will say I probably would be more willing to eat that than like a mayonnaise-y potato salad, although I do like the red, white, and blue one. I like a German potato salad with no mayonnaise.
Is that just where it's really mad at you?
Yes, it's very strident and makes you feel bad about yourself. No, German potato salad is no mayo. It's like warm and there's like a vinegar dressing on it.
Oh, I would like that for sure.
And like some dill. Yeah, it's so German potato salad, strong yes for me. I like to make it so that my potatoes with roasted potatoes, so and baby potatoes, so they get like crispy on the outside. And then toss them in kind of, it's basically just salad dressing. I mean, it's like a vinegar, a sugar, vinegar, and spices kind of mixture. And you throw a little bacon in there as well. And it is pretty delicious.
I also like the move when you're at a barbecue joint where like you wait until the last couple bites and you scoop up all of the meat and the potato salad and whatever sides you have and put it on that piece of white bread they give you. And
Yeah.
Potato salad goes really well as kind of like a large clump on top of all that.
Yeah, but I will always pick macaroni, just straight up mac and cheese or baked beans as a side over either of those.
Well, especially if you can put pulled pork on top of the mac and cheese.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, now I'm hungry.
Yeah.
Yeah, great time for one of these takeout restaurants to get their name out there, perhaps.
I know. I mean, a small
startup like Cracker Barrel.
I mean, I've dropped L&L as well, which is in Burien, and I will drive down.
Those are national.
To get it.
Those are good.
Yeah, if you're in Southwest Portland, go hit up Bamboo Grove. They are still dope as hell, and you will be set on food for a week if you get a large. So. Yeah.
There is so much, and God bless L&L. Like since I've tried to like pretty much stick to local restaurants, and you know community owned stuff since the pandemic has hit, and L&L has repaid the generosity of. They're so grateful for people to order them. They have just gone nuts on like portion size. I got like a pound of beef from them the other night. I don't know how. It was like $7. Oh, yeah. It was fantastic. I love you, L&L.
There's a Thai spot in Queen Anne called Racha that's giving out. If you order takeout, they just give you one of those Thai iced teas, which I'm not even normally a fan of. But when they're handing it to you for free, it's like, okay, obviously I'm going to take this.
Yeah,
and it's
I will
so
take
sweet,
this.
But it's
I will
so
drink
good.
This and I will run off the walls for the rest of the night.
Yeah. I found the place because I've had a similar experience to both of y'all, it sounds like, where the best macaroni salad I've ever had was from like a little Hawaiian barbecue place, and I found it. It's in Tucson, Arizona. when I was visiting my friend at U of A, we went to Mama's Hawaiian Barbecue, and they also have a great mac salad. So I'm more just saying that because I was happy that I found the name of the website while y'all were, I mean, the name of the restaurant while you guys were talking. But if we have any
listeners
in Tucson,
there's some good Hawaiian barbecue in Phoenix. I mean, that's one of the weirdly only good things you can get down there for eating. They have a few different Hawaiian barbecue restaurants.
Nice, nice, nice. All right, well, that was all that I had. As always, we would encourage you to read our website. Like Kate said, we will have a lot of stuff for the upcoming draft if you want to get
draft,
learned
draft,
up
draft,
on that.
Draft, 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 draft.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. It's baseball Christmas.
Yeah, we've got coming up next week, we'll have a mock draft from Joe based on just everything he can sort of pull from his feelers around the league. We'll also have probably just like a few more quick profiles on likely targets for Seattle.
Especially down the board where it's like, because there are so few people that,
And I recommend
there are so few rounds this year that we can really kind of dig in on a few different interesting targets.
And
so,
just slap that MLB Draft 2020 tab. It's on on the site. You can scroll down and it's there, and you can just go through. We've got probably 20 or 30 profiles at this point. We'll have, I might try and squeeze out a couple more before the draft.
Even though Rob Manfred told us that Christmas was going to be small this year, it's still baseball Christmas. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and we'll be grateful for whatever we get under the tree.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm going to be less grateful for Max Meyer.
All right, Kate. I'm gonna make sure Matthew embeds a slider supercut from this motherfucker, because it is disgusting.
It is. It's good, but
it's not a 12-6 curveball or a well-located changeup just on the outside corner. No.
I mean, no. It's a good pitch. He's fine.
I know.
Okie dokie. Thanks everyone for listening. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at mroberson22. John is at John Troopin. Kate is at Kate Prusser. They just have their regular names and not numbers in them because they probably didn't make their Twitter accounts when they were in high school, but that is not the point. stay tuned for more updates. Check out the They Might Be Mariners show within the same feed that you're listening to this one on, if you're on iTunes or whatever. They're all on the site as well, which you should keep your eye on. And until next time, goodbye.
Bye. Bye.
This is my part, nobody else speak. This is my part, nobody else speak. This little light of mine, glory be to God, yeah. I'ma make sure that they go where they can't go. If they don't wanna ride, I'ma still give them raincoats. Know what God said when he made the first rainbow? Just throw this at the end and fuck them late for the intro. I'm just having fun with it. You know that a nigga was lost. I laugh in my head cause I bet that my ex looking back like a pillar of salt.